Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello. My name is Dr. Harold Bays, Medical Director and President of the Louisville Metabolic and Atherosclerosis Research Center, located in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm also Chief Science Officer of the Obesity Medicine Association, and I'm also Editor-in-Chief of Obesity Pillars, which is the official journal of the Obesity Medicine Association. Welcome to this podcast. It's called the series of podcasts by the Obesity Medicine Association is entitled Obesity, a Disease. And at least for my podcast, what I like to focus on are recent articles that have been published, and preferably articles that have been published in Obesity Pillars, which is, again, the official journal of the Obesity Medicine Association. And one of the things we like to do is we like to seek out experts, and if, you know, just any way possible, we like to seek out the authors of these articles that we're discussing. And that's exactly what we're going to do here today. We're going to be talking about an article that was just recently published entitled Weight-Centric Prevention of Cancer. Okay. And then, of course, we're going to be talking about how it's integrated with obesity management and such. And we are just so fortunate to have with us today one of the co-authors of this publication, Daniela Hurtado. Daniela, why don't you tell the folks who you are and what you do?
Sure. Thank you for having me here today, Harold. My name is Daniela Hurtado. I am an endocrinologist and obesity medicine physician at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. My clinical and research focuses are on weight management in women, particularly those at high cardiometabolic risk, including breast cancer survivors.
Okay, well, that's precisely what we're looking for when we're discussing this weight-centric prevention of cancer. I want to preface this particular podcast by just reminding folks that in 2022, the Obesity Medicine Association published Cancer and Obesity, an Obesity Medicine Association Clinical Practice Statement. And at that time, the first author was Dr. Ethan Lazarus. He's former president of the OMA. And we did a podcast on that discussion as well. So if people want to follow this up with also a review of that podcast, I thought that was truly excellent. I think Dr. Lazarus did a tremendous job, just like I know Daniela here is going to do a great job with this one. So let's just start from the beginning. So Daniela, can you give us a sense? I mean, I think many people know, but I don't know that everybody knows, that maybe secondary to cigarette smoking, obesity's the number one preventable cause of cancer and such. What are the potential mechanisms? How obesity or the adiposopathy? What are the mechanisms by which this obesity can contribute to many of the most common cancers that we find in clinical practice?
You are absolutely correct. Obesity is a major risk factor for multiple cancers. It has been established that out of all new cancer diagnoses in the United States, 40% are obesity-associated malignancies. And we do know that there are several cancers that have a direct link with obesity, including esophageal, gastric, colorectal, liver, gallbladder, pancreas, breast, and many others. The mechanisms linking obesity and cancer are yet to be completely understood. The mechanisms will also depend on the location of the cancer. But in general, we think about four different mechanisms that could be involved. So the first one is that the adipose tissue is a highly active endocrine organ that is constantly producing cytokines that are also known as adipokines. And these adipokines increase the risk of malignancy via alteration of receptor-mediated signaling pathways, insulin sensitivity, inflammatory response, and also by promoting angiogenesis. There is other mechanisms, for example, one that adipose tissue maturation could contribute to a low-grade chronic inflammation that it has been well established, and this can result in the release of multiple pro-inflammatory cytokines and angiogenic factors that contribute to the perfect milieu for cancer to develop. There has been some suggestion that also alterations in the gut microbiota that is seen in the setting of obesity could even further promote the chronic inflammation and therefore increase even more the risk of developing cancer. And as I already mentioned, there may be some mechanisms that will depend on the cancer location. For example, it has been established that acid reflux can lead to Barrett's esophagus due to the increase in intra-abdominal pressure, and Barrett's could be a precursor of gastroesophageal cancer. Therefore, it is thought that it could be one of the factors, but not the only factor that leads to cancer development.
Okay, well, that's, I find it interesting. When I have reviewed the literature on this, I think you're exactly right that you get these cytokines and such and can result in, disruption of cellular machinery and such that it causes cells to become autonomous in how they replicate. And that's exactly what cancer is. And you have the increase in angiogenesis, which, allows it more easy access into the bloodstream and such. And therefore you're facilitating metastases. Mm-hmm. But one of the other things that I've found conceptually interesting is that you mentioned insulin resistance. Well, with insulin resistance becomes hyperinsulinemia, not just the insulin, but insulin-like growth factors and such. And, would you agree that, once you do get this disruption of the machinery of the cells, that it's possible that this hyperinsulinemia, this increase in growth factors, can exacerbate any kind of potential malignancy gets exacerbated by this by these growth factors, by the hyperinsulinemia. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. I do believe that there is a synergistic effect of these mechanisms that just put you at an even higher risk of affecting the cellular process, and therefore leading to an increased risk of cancer progression, for example.
So let's take the converse of that. So a lot of folks that manage obesity, very focused on insulin resistance. That's a very big focus. And one of the ways in which primarily people involved in obesity medicine, really try to treat the insulin resistance is through weight reduction. Okay. And also, as you mentioned, that's another potential way in which you can reduce inflammation. So I guess I would ask you, when you're talking about weight reduction in our patients with obesity, in what way does that weight reduction help either decrease the risk of cancer or actually improve the response of cancer to, say, cancer treatments?
That is an excellent question. And I don't think that we have been able to fully understand or describe the mechanisms behind a decreased in cancer risk that has been associated with weight reduction. And since multiple mechanisms are involved in the development of cancer in the setting of obesity, the same goes with anti-obesity or weight loss interventions in which we're probably targeting multiple pathways, not only the pathway of insulin resistance, but also the pathway of inflammation. And of course, inflammation and insulin resistance are also linked, but it's probably multiple targets that are having overall a synergistic effect in cancer reduction with weight loss interventions.
And this weight reduction, yes. I think We all understand that includes healthful nutrition, which you're going to want to do anyway. Increase in physical activity, that by itself can really help our patients with either prevention or response to cancer treatments. But beyond nutritional intervention, increased physical activity, behavior modification, and anti-obesity medications and such, what about bariatric surgery? You know, what's the data on bariatric surgery and effects upon either cancer prevention or improvement in cancer prognosis?
That's a very good question, but maybe we should take two steps back and talk a little bit about what the evidence in general in relation to weight loss is. And the reality is that we do not have very good evidence showing that certain interventions are better than others. I think the data is limited. We do know based on longitudinal cohort studies, for example, that weight loss is associated with decreased cancer risk. And this has been most of all demonstrated in postmenopausal women, for example, through the Women's Health Initiative and also the Iowa Women's Health Study. So we know that for a fact. But then when we look at specific interventions that that can lead to weight loss and therefore an improved risk of or a decreased risk of developing cancer, we don't have very strong data. For example, when it comes to lifestyle interventions, we only have very small studies suggesting that weight loss could lead to improvement in certain biomarkers of cancer risk, but not cancer itself. There have been some studies suggesting that dietary macronutrient composition may be a better predictor of cancer risk. For example, the fact that there is an association between red meat and processed meat and colon cancer, or the fact that following a Mediterranean diet could be associated with a decreased risk of cancer in general. When it comes to exercise, again, we don't have a lot of data, but we do know that exercise, of course, is great for health. I'm not minimizing the importance of exercise, but studies that have looked into exercise or exercise and diet have demonstrated that exercise by itself has not been demonstrated to have an independent effect in cancer reduction. A lot of the beneficial effect in cancer risk reduction has been seen when exercise is combined with diet, which again underscores the importance of dietary habits in the risk of developing cancer. And of course, with anti-obesity medications, we don't have much at all. With bariatric surgery, is probably with the intervention that we have the most evidence. Studies have established that bariatric surgery is associated with a decreased cancer risk. Now, there are some limitations in relation to where these data come from. A lot of these data is retrospective. There could be bias in terms of patient selection, but there is one prospective study that shed a little bit more light into what is truly the cancer risk after bariatric surgery. And this is the Swedish obese subject study, the SOS study. For this study, they recruited thousands of patients that underwent bariatric surgery and they were followed over time. And they also had a control of match controls of patients who did not undergo bariatric surgery. And they looked at their cancer risk years after. And what this study showed is that in general, patients who underwent bariatric surgery did have a decreased risk of cancer. And what was very interesting about these studies, then they divided men and women, and they found that the decreased risk was mainly in women and not men. And they also looked by the type of surgery. And they showed that patients who underwent gastric banding, which was part of these studies, not a procedure that we do or recommend anymore, and the vertical banded gastroplastic and not the Roux-en-Y white gastric bypass was actually associated with a decreased risk. So it seems to be dependent on the type of surgery as well. And then other studies that have looked retrospectively at these data or meta-analysis that have looked at these data, again, show that in general, there is a reduced cancer risk, Some data suggests that with Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, there may be an increased risk of certain types of cancer, maybe because of changes in the gut microbiota. Again, this is not very well understood, but there are other studies that suggest that that is not the case. So the data are contradictory, but in general, there is a signal towards the fact that after Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, there is a decreased risk of cancer. And they have looked into see what leads to this decreased cancer risk. And a study suggests that it is mostly related to the amount of weight loss. So the more weight loss, the higher risk reduction. And there is really no suggestion at this point that bariatric surgery may have a weight independent mechanism to reduce this cancer risk.
I think that's very important. And it also goes to what you said before, that the gastric banding didn't seem to help all that much as far as reducing risk of cancer. And the particular bariatric procedures that had the greatest association were going to be the gastric sleeve and the gastric bypass and such. And I think we all know that there's a substantially, you know, greater weight reduction with those latter procedures as opposed to gastric banding. So that would be very consistent with what you said. And if you add that to the totality of the evidence that, you know, as you said, that signaling that with nutrition, physical activity, and as you said, we really don't have great data with anti-obesity medications yet, but hopefully we will in the future with longer term clinical trials and such, that, you know, just as with cardiovascular disease, the greater the weight reduction, it appears that there may be the greatest chance of cancer prevention or maybe even greater response to cancer treatments. I mean, is that kind of the bottom line? Because your article is weight-centric prevention of cancer. And so is that an essential message that you would have people take away, that at least from the totality of the evidence we have now, the effectiveness of weight reduction intervention, you know, that effectiveness correlates to prevention of cancer. And as I said, also response to cancer treatments. Would that be accurate?
Yes. I mean, we do know that obesity in general creates this chronic pro-inflammatory milieu that can affect not only cancer risk, but the risk of developing many other diseases. We also know that excess adiposity could be associated with worse outcomes. We know that for a fact in breast cancer survivors. Excess weight in breast cancer survivors is not only associated with worse breast cancer outcomes, meaning chances of breast cancer recurring and dying from breast cancer, but is also associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, which after breast cancer is the leading cause of death in this woman. So when we talk about overall cancer management or cancer prevention, we need to look at the in a holistic way. Yes, we worry about obesity and the effects of obesity in the cancer, but the reality is that cancer treatments are improving. Patients are surviving their cancers, but then they are dying of other diseases. And what are they dying of? Cardiovascular disease. And obesity is the major risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So internally, we don't have, you know, a strong evidence suggesting that obesity, we should manage obesity on its own and just obesity for decreasing the risk of cancer or improving cancer outcomes, but it is an important part of the holistic management of patients to prevent cancer and also to manage their cancer and improve their overall outcomes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then,
go ahead.
You know, we do know that patients with obesity, there may be some other situations that need to be considered, dosing of chemotherapeutic agents or other treatment types and how they will respond to those treatment options in the setting of obesity. So, of course, obesity can never, you asked that question, obesity can affect the response to treatments.
So here's what the way I sort of look at this is that in the past, so you mentioned we ought to look at the patients in a holistic way, in a totality way. And I 100% agree with that. I mean, I did at one time did a lot of primary care. I mean, I'm an endocrinologist, but I still did a lot of primary care. And I think I've come full circle and over the decades. And in this case, this is what I'm talking about. When we talk about cardiovascular disease and we talk about cancer, a lot of people think those are two totally different things. Mm-hmm. But the way that I look at it is, if we look at what are risk factors for both, it would be unhealthful nutrition. It would be physical inactivity. It would be maybe certain types of behaviors and such. It would be the types of foods. So it's not just the quantity of foods, it's the quality of foods and such. Both of those, both cardiovascular disease and cancer are very much reliant on those factors. And then the flip side is also true. If patients are engaged in healthful nutrition, whole grain foods, avoiding processed foods, routine physical activity, I mean, maybe by itself doesn't promote weight reduction. Maybe it doesn't in itself, prevent cancer. But when you combine it with healthful nutrition, there's no doubt that it does help facilitate weight reduction and maintenance of weight reduction. Okay, so that's clear with physical activity.
Absolutely.
And then we add behavior modification, then the possibilities of bariatric surgeries and such. It should not come as a surprise to folks that these very same treatments that we employ for, I'm not saying treatment of, but to prevent cancer or to enhance the effectiveness of cancer treatment are the very same types of interventions that we would use for cardiovascular disease prevention mm-hmm. and to enhance the effectiveness of cardiovascular disease treatment. So I think gone are the days that we can just silo people and chop up people into pieces and say, you know, this is what you do for cancer and this is what you do for cardiovascular disease, at least with regard to weight management and such. To me, I think they both share those immunopathies and those endocrinopathies and the same sort of dysregulation of cellular mechanisms and such. And so, again, should be no surprise that our approach is remarkably similar between cardiovascular disease and cancer. And so my question to you is, how do we get that message across? I mean, obesity medicine folks, you know, probably know that, but how do we get that message across to primary care clinicians and patients?
I completely agree with you. And as you may be aware, we have been writing this series of how can we do a weight-centric management of multiple diseases, right? Not just cancer, but diabetes, the mental health. Because at the end of the day, obesity, I like thinking of obesity, and of course, it's associated, the associated mechanisms that can predispose people to develop obesity, and including, you know, anything related to diet, lifestyle. And of course, the pathophysiologic mechanisms. I like seeing that as the keystone target, that if we truly target this keystone, we're going to have a cascade effect of clinical benefits, like virtually affecting every organ in our body. It's hard. I mean, I think it is improving. Education is key to make people understand, health providers understand that we should focus on obesity as the disease it is. At the end of the day, it's the most prevalent chronic disease. Most of our patients live with overweight or obesity. And if we were to focus on obesity, again, the clinical benefits would be immense. It's getting better. Like I said, there is still a lot to do. Education is key. Getting primary providers and other specialties involved. And that's something that I love about Mayo Clinic here. A lot of departments are trying to understand how they can incorporate chronic weight management into their own specialties. Of course, for transplant patients, we are working on creating a clinic to make sure we provide a holistic approach for these patients without necessarily increasing their burden, right? Because the other thing is that we're treating patients with chronic diseases and they have to see the transplant team, but then they also have to see the weight management team. So adding this burden can make it very difficult for our patients to manage their diseases effectively. So if we can seamlessly incorporate weight management into their treatment plans, I think we're more likely to succeed in the long term. I got an email the other day from the orthopedics department. They are thinking of incorporating a clinic for weight management in patients who are in need of joint replacements, which I think it's fantastic, right? Because at the end of the day, obesity medicine physicians, endocrinologists, whoever is treating patients living with obesity, we don't have the capacity to treat them all. So creating these partnerships is extremely important to improve the outcomes of our patients, to improve quality of life, and make people healthier.
Well, Danielle, I think that's a great takeaway message there. You know, treating the obesity to improve the health of our patients. I've often said that it's not just improving the weight of our patients, it's improving the health of our patients. And I particularly liked how you said that, yes, this article is talking about weight central prevention of cancer, but you could fill in the blank with a lot of things. Weight centric prevention of diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, thrombosis, cardiovascular disease, sleep apnea. You just mentioned osteoarthritis and such. And with this particular conversation, hopefully people get the understanding of the importance of weight centric interventions and prevention of cancer. So Danielle, again, I want to thank you very much. This has been highly educational. I think people are really going to like this discussion and such, because it's I think it's so critically important. And I want to thank you, the listener, for attending this program. This is Obesity, a Disease, and my name is Dr. Harold Bays.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.